divorced, things like that. People like when Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck were in the middle of getting divorced, every single day their faces and another story about them was in a different magazine. And it's like, oh, and he cheated on her. It's like, well, you know, guess what? A lot of husbands cheat on their wives, and it doesn't make them terrible people. Not saying that was a good idea.
No.
Do you think that it makes sense that you're getting divorced now? But at the same time, it's like we kind of forget that underneath it all, I mean, Louis C.K., regardless of what he did in his personal life, which I in no way condone, by the way, you take that out of it, he's a guy that worked his butt off to become one of the biggest comedians in the country. And it would be the same if he worked his butt off to become one of the best surgeons in the country, or one of the best lawyers in the country, or one of the best physicists in the country, and then had something happen that it just got taken out from under
him. Right.
And again, I'm not defending what he did, but I understand what you're exactly right, because I understand what Norm Macdonald is saying, in that, like, this is still a person with feelings and like a livelihood and a life to think about. It's almost like we detach ourselves from that fact.
As someone who knows someone who was in the news cycle for a situation that was out of her control, but in which her name was dragged through the mud, and her reputation and relationship with a gentleman who killed a couple of police officers was questioned in a lot of different ways.
Ooh, this is getting real interesting.
This had nothing at all to do with her. Nothing to do with her. Everything to do with him. She was still collateral damage.
Oh, of course.
She was devastated. Well, absolutely devastated.
I would say, of course. And I mean, it's the same as like when somebody gets falsely accused or even falsely convicted of a crime and then is found to be innocent. Stigma's still there.
WMFO Medford. I have to say that. WMFO Medford.
Stigma's still there. Everyone's, even though they were proven innocent, it's like even been notarized on a piece of paper and everything. Everyone still looks and is like, oh, that's the one that they thought killed that guy.
Yeah.
Like, they're never going to be themselves ever, ever, ever again. And that's definitely the case with Louis C.K.
Well, I mean, in his case, he brought it on himself.
Oh, okay. Of course. I think about being in the position he put other female comedians in, and I'm like,
That is a pattern of behavior that existed with him before he became famous, okay?
Which he admitted to, which I always thought was rather admirable.
He's gone on for years. This is who the guy was.
Like, this is my weird thing.
This was
like
his
some
kink.
People like to give people foot massages. Like, yeah. This is my thing.
Yeah. And, you know, for the women that complained, let me tell you that there are a very large number of women who have not complained because they were perfectly okay with it. That doesn't mean it's okay in every situation. I'm just saying this was not limited to those handful of women that came forward.
It's
a thing with the guy.
Well, and on the flip side of that, there are women that it hasn't happened to, but that are aware of this behavior. That are, like, Sarah Silverman's one of the people I look up to most in this world. She's one of his best friends. She obviously knew. Like, they once, in his old apartment building, took off all their clothes, threw them down the shaft, ran down to get them, put them back on, ran back up, threw them down the shaft again, just as they thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And did it, like, 20 times. I'm pretty sure they probably talked about, like, the things they were into sexually.
Yeah.
And she, when all of that broke about him, she still backed him up, even though she's a woman. And not even just a woman, but an obvious feminist. Not the kind that I can't stand, that I'm like, oh my god, I'm going to break your soapbox with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
But the, like, the true definition of a feminist, where she's just like, she's a down ass chick, you know, like this whole thing just makes my head hurt, Derek.
Out of sensitivity to our audience.
Oh no, you're making it worse.
Out of sensitivity to our audience.
Even though your voice for that gets better each time you do it.
Out of sensitivity to our audience.
Out of sensitivity to our audience. I feel like you have to, like, really open, let the jaw loose when you do it.
Out of sensitivity to our audience, we have decided to monkey this up. By the way, I'm thinking I haven't given up on that, by the way. I'm thinking of changing the name of the show to Monkey It Up.
Oh, so you're also thinking of getting a new co-host. Is that what you're saying?
What? No, I thought you were on board with calling the show that.
monkey it up?
Yeah, you remember from that election night thing a couple of weeks ago? A guy won the primary, and the black guy won the primary, and the guy was like,
"Oh yeah,
okay,
that.
Florida, don't monkey it up." And it's like, "Whoa, wait a second, guy, what did you just say there?"
Oh, that's what you're referencing. Yeah, we can't do that. We'll get taken off the air.
No, it's ironic.
I don't think everyone will get that.
Oh yeah, that's the problem. That is the problem.
Well,
isn't
all
it?
Of you get smarter. It will make our lives easier.
Lousy optics are really, really making my life difficult, mm-hmm. is what I'm going to say.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Hope you like rain, kids, because, you know, we get some hanging around here. Rain tonight, lows in the mid-60s. Rain tomorrow morning, high tomorrow around 70 degrees, lows in the mid-60s again tomorrow night. Humid, 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 humid. Friday, partly cloudy. Temperature will be nice in the mid-70s. Lows around 60 degrees Friday night. Humid, 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 humid. More of the same on Saturday. Highs in the mid-70s. Humid, humid, humid. Lows in the low-60s Saturday night. Sunday, sunny. High in the low 80s, lows in the mid 60s Sunday night. The humidity, it's going to stick around for a while. It's going to be a nice weekend, and then at some point next week, we'll probably get some hurricane remnants blowing in here. It is 8:06. This is WMFO Medford. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Chase Belain with you until 9 o'clock. When on the town, Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. We will be back thinking about 9/11 and the legacy of 9/11.
Well, that's
right after this here on WMFO Medford.
The quality grade mark on the meat you buy? Well, that's the yield grade. Although the yield grade is important to the retailer, you don't need to be concerned about it unless you're buying a large cut of meat like an untrimmed wholesale cut. The yield grade tells you how much usable meat you will have after the waste is removed. A yield grade 1 has the most usable meat, and a yield grade 5 the least. To learn more, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Desperate for changing, starving for truth. I'm closer to where I started. I'm chasing after you. I'm falling even more in love with you. Letting go of all I've ever longed to. I'm standing here until you make me move. I'm hanging by a moment here with you. Forgetting all I'm lacking, completely incomplete. I'll take your invitation. You take all.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Belain. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock if you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And we're going to be discussing yesterday one of the less desirable milestones in our country, which is, of course, the anniversary of 17th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks.
This one hits a little bit harder than some of the recent anniversaries because it was a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And, you know, those of us who were aware and alive at that point know it was a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it rolls back around on the actual day of, it hits you a little bit harder than, you know, oh, it's Saturday and it's 9/11 and, gee, probably shouldn't be at this baseball game. But, well, there you go, you know.
Well, and the fact, I feel like there was, and, you know, there's to this day so many theories about why they chose the day that they did. I do not think Al-Qaeda cared. I do not think Al-Qaeda cared that 9/11 happens to be the same numbers as 9/11. Nope. So many people say that, and I'm like, you're a dummy. But I do, regardless of why they chose that day, I do think it's very significant just for the experience that, I mean, all of us have, but particularly the people that were very close to it, is a Tuesday is like the definition of just any other day. Mm. Like Tuesday is, I'm going to get up, I'm going to shower, have some coffee. Like, I'm going to walk to the subway, get off the subway, go to my office, maybe chat with everyone before I settle down to work. Like, it's very, Tuesday is a mundane day, or at least it should be. And this was, of course, anything but.
Do they even use the same numbers that we use? I'm pretty sure we use Arabic numerals. That's the last gasp of humor in any of this.
I was gonna say, I was like, I feel weird laughing while we talk about it. And you know, Derek, I can laugh at some very inappropriate times.
Oh yes. Oh, we've learned that the hard way on this show.
I always apologize.
Yes, I know, but someday it's not gonna be enough and you'll be getting death threats.
Well, then I'll just go join a club with Louis C.K. and Roseanne. How's that?
I remember that morning vividly. Mm. And I can imagine what that morning was like in New York City, because I've had the privilege of being in New York City on a crisp, cool autumn day right after the heat breaks.
Yeah.
And there is...
Which September 11th is the perfect time. Like, that is when that happens.
It was one of those days. It was a perfectly crystal blue sky. It was a nice, cool, pleasant day. And New York City, after it's been dealing with the heat for a while, when you get that nice, cool day,
everybody's in such a good mood.
Everybody just sort of lifts up. Everybody's floating a foot off the ground, and they're like, oh, you know what? New York City can be, look, it can be nice here. It's not miserable all the time. It was that kind of a morning. And I was on my way to work, being the shiftless employee that I am, I was probably arriving late. And for whatever reason, this was unusual for me, I'd had WBCN on, which I don't know if that station even still exists anymore, 104.1.
No, it does not. It's now another frequency for Mix 98.5.
Yeah, which used to be
98.5. Yeah, because we needed another one of those. Yeah.
And they had Howard Stern on in the mornings.
Yes, I was going to say, that was Howard's, like, one of his first big, like, syndications was with BCM.
And my morning routine was to wake up, go to the neighborhood corner store, grab a soda and cigarettes, and then drive into the office. Mm-hmm. So that I'd have a fresh pack of smokes and something to drink in the car while I was on my way. As I was getting out of the car, I distinctly heard someone say... And I could tell there was a lot of commotion on the Howard Stern show, which wasn't unusual. And there wasn't anything really strange about that. But it seemed to be a little more amped up than usual. Mm-hmm. I distinctly heard someone say they have footage. Bryant Gumbel has footage of the second plane hitting the building.
And you were like, oh, what?
And I got out of the car and I looked up and I realized there was a fighter jet overhead and no other planes in the sky. So I went in and I got my cigarettes and my soda, got back in the car and could tell something was up. Mm-hmm. So I immediately turned around, went back home, threw a tape into the VCR and turned on the TV and spent the next five
that
hours.
Was smart, because that was before it was like TiVo and all of that.
This was probably I want to say this was about 9:15, 9:20 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so
about 15 minutes after the second plane hit.
Spent the next 5 hours in front of that television just watching the world fall apart.
Yeah. Well, I was a sophomore in high school. And I remember we were, I was in Spanish class, and the president of my school, Sister Barbara represent, but the president of my school, just out of respect for all of us, said over the loudspeaker, we just want to inform you, there has been some kind of large explosion in the Twin Towers in New York City. The authorities are not aware yet if it was an accident or if it was a terrorist attack of some sort or an attack of some sort. But we will be adjusting the day accordingly as we find out more about this. So it's like even my, I mean, the president of my school, she was the like most I'm not going to get riled up about something kind of woman. You know what I mean? Like she's not, she's minimizing everything as much as possible. And I remember hearing in her voice just like, okay, if Sister Barbara's kind of freaking out, like something's going on.
Yeah.
But so, I was in, so this, you know, the first, the news broke, like the first plane hit, I think at 8:46, which the news broke, of course, maybe 4 or 5 minutes later.
8:50 was pretty much when they, when it, it hit when the it, wires just, and started
everyone,
popping up.
Yeah, when it just everyone started knowing. But I always remember being in Spanish class, Senor Torres, I was such a jerk. But he was from Chile, he's Chilean. He constantly talked about how he didn't like the United States and was only there so he could send money back home. So he's telling us to conjugate verbs, and we were like, Senor Torres, like, a huge thing just happened to, not the capital of our country, but New York is essentially the epicenter of our country. And he said, whatever, keep conjugating your verbs. And I remember all of us being like, no, we're not doing that. But then, of course, the bell rang. I had honors history next, and this was my favorite teacher in high school, Mrs. Hoy. I hope you're doing well, Mrs. Hoy. But we get to Mrs. Hoy's classroom, and she was weeping. And she had the foresight. This is part of why Mrs. Hoy was so dope. She'd had the foresight. We had like maybe like 6 televisions that you could rent out from like our AV whatever. And she had the foresight like right when it happened to go and take the first one. Like,
yeah.
To go and like have it. And then once it became clear that it was obviously not an accident, obviously not something electrical or something, you know, like that it was obviously something really big and really threatening. They basically gave us the option of like, if you're able to, you can go home. If your parents are able to come pick you up, you're welcome to come to the office and try to call them. But of course, nobody could call anybody because everyone, it was when cell phones pretty much like first really sprung on the scene in a big way. And everyone was using it at the same time, so yeah. Nobody could get through. But then she said, or if you have no other option, you can take study hall, you can remain in the classroom you're in, like whatever you're, basically she said, like whatever you're comfortable doing right now, like we're just going to let you do it. So most of us actually just ended up staying in Mrs. Hoy's class, watching the footage for the entire day. And I always remember my mom picking me up from school that day and just like, I didn't realize like what a mess and like how distraught I looked until I saw her face see my face. Cause God, I just couldn't, it, especially when you're 15 years old, like you're, the things you worry about, and also my parents had gotten divorced like 6 months before. So I was like, oh, that's the most devastating thing that can possibly happen. And then two freaking jet airliners crash into what are supposed to be the most secure buildings in the world. So when you're 15 years old, that's a lot to take.
Yeah. I wound up spending all of that day by myself pretty much because I got a phone call at about 11:20. I might have been earlier than, but it's, I seem to remember it being around 11:20 from the VP of my company basically saying, are you in the office? And I said, no. And he said, don't bother going in because we're not.
Yeah, like we're not doing anything.
We're closed down today. We're not.
Like, only come in if you want to watch the news with us.
We'll see you tomorrow.
I feel like that was everyone's day that day.
This office, by the way, was on the 6th floor of a building on top of a hill in the flight path of Hanscom Air Force Base.
Oh, God, that would have been no fun.
Let me tell you, once they reopened the skies and the planes started coming in again, that was not a fun place to be for a couple of weeks because you'd sit there in the conference room and watch airplanes come at the building and you'd be like, oh man, here we go. I went out briefly. I pretty much spent the whole day videotaping and watching everything unfold I went out at one point to pick up some DVDs that I'd special ordered that were coming in that day because it was a Tuesday. Went to a bar.
Because it was, as we said, just any other Tuesday.
Went to a bar to get a drink and some dinner. Wanted to punch the girl that was playing Mega Touch all night because other than the television, that was the only noise in the bar.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, silence. I think our whole country was silent.
This girl walks into the bar with her boyfriend who sits down and is watching CBS with everybody else as we're watching, you know, all these new angles of planes flying.
I was
going
to say,
they
were so determined to get the best angle of that.
And she's just sitting there playing Mega Touch, like over and over and over again. And you could feel the tension rising in the bar and you could feel everybody in the place just wanting to be like, will you stop doing that? But nobody said a word because the other side of that was as soon as somebody says something, everybody in here is going to lose it.
Yeah.
I didn't actually cry until Wednesday morning, driving to work, picked up a copy of the Boston Herald that had the image of the flag being unfurled in front of the Pentagon.
Oh, my God.
And I just sat in my car and wept for 5 minutes before I could even think of turning the ignition and getting back on the road.
I remember my mom picked me up from school, brought me to get a cat. For background listeners, since my parents got divorced, I've been bugging my mom to get me a cat.
Well, here's your cat.
I was going to say,
here's your comfort animal.
I was trying to be all deep about it. I was like, you know, since Dad moved out, it feels like there's like a soul missing from the house. And I really think we need to fix that balance. She's like, shut up. You're just trying to get a cat. And then she picked me up on September 11th. And like I said, I didn't realize what my face looked like until I saw her see my face. She goes, all right, get in the car. We're getting a cat. Yeah. But then got back to my house. My brother was already home because he went to BC High. So he just took the T home. And was he driving at that point? No, he wasn't driving it. But he's watching. Obviously, like, he's just exactly as you described. He's just sitting silently, like, glued to the TV. And I sit down next to him. I was like, I don't think we should, like, I don't want to watch this anymore. I can't watch this anymore. And me and Danny just both kind of looked at her like, okay, well, you don't have to. Like, I think that day, I probably saw that plane fly into that tower 400 times from 400 different angles. And it didn't really, like, it, don't get me wrong, I was obviously devastated and scared, and especially, you know, like, I grew up in Quincy, which is just a hop and a skip from Boston, and I remember just picturing a plane flying into the Prudential, like, just picturing that happening here. And for years, and I mean, obviously, it could still happen here, but for years, like, only until just recently did I finally stop routinely thinking about that, like, not that exactly, of course, but something like that happening here. Especially, that's, like, honestly, one of the things that freaked me out the most is that they flew out of Logan Airport.
Well, I'll do you one better, because three of the hijackers slept in my neighborhood that night.
Oh, creepy.
On September 10th. Because I lived about...
Oh, I don't like that at all. I don't like that at all.
I lived about two blocks away from the Days Hotel on Soldiers Field Road, which is
where...
Oh,
yeah, I know exactly where that is.
The hijackers of Flight 175.
Oh, that's right. That is where they stayed.
Yeah. So, imagine driving by that several times a day, every day.
And just always having to think about it.
This is the only time in my life I have ever had this thought. And I'd been to a funeral on September 7th, which was Friday. My brother-in-law's mother had died. And it was the first of the parents in this, you know, extended family to go. So it was a, you know, big solemn moment for everybody. But as I sat there on September 11th, I remember thinking to myself, I envy her because the world that she left behind did not contain this.
Mm-hmm. That's, I was going to say, I mean, that's what I always think, like, it was like this generation's JFK getting shot.
It goes beyond
but
that.
But, like, I was going to say, but that's the thing. It's like this generation's JFK getting shot times like 10 million. And not, yeah. I'm not, like, downplaying when JFK got shot, because obviously that was crazy pants. But Well, what was funny too, I'm not going to use the word funny while we're talking right now. What was interesting was that as much as obviously, like I said, I was very scared, I was all of that, it didn't really set in what had happened until, like, the reality of all of it until when I was a kid, me and my dad, every Columbus Day weekend, we'd go down to New York City. It was just like a thing. We started doing it when I was like three. And we still did it that year. So it was, you know, a month and a half later. And the ground was still covered in soot and covered in ash. Like, and we're talking, I used to think, which I, you know, now that I've seen, they have a lot more footage out there now because they didn't want to, there are a lot of, especially because of what time it happened, they weren't showing everything on the news because there were children awake. But, you know, I pictured it as like, okay, like the immediate, like, it affected the financial district. No. This went up to, like, there was ash and all the way up Central Park. Like, yep. It, and then I remember, it's so funny how, like, images just get implanted in your brain. I remember the moment that it really, really, really set in for me was when we were getting on the subway. And I, like I said, I'm 15. I've been to New York, like, 12, more than 12 times, but at least once a year since I was three. And I'm standing there looking like so bewildered. My dad's like, what? And I was like, what the heck are all of these? And the entire subway wall was just plastered with missing persons posters. And it made me, like, it was like it slapped me in the face with the reality that there are hundreds, thousands of families out there just wondering what happened to their loved ones and who are probably never going to find out. Like, they can assume, okay, they worked in that building, we can't find them, they're probably dead. But at the same time, it seeing all of them, because, you know, just paper to paper, there was no negative space on that wall, just plastering every inch of the subway. Just think, like, just it's like it, like I said, it's like it slapped me in the face with the actual truth, the actual full devastation of what had happened.
And for those who don't know, you see the dust, and you imagine like a handful of dust or a handful of flour or something like that.
Oh no,
it was not soft.
It was
the coarsest, scratchiest, roughest stuff imaginable.
I would say, like, if you've ever been in a car accident and had the airbags deploy and that powder that's on the airbags, it's like 500 times worse than that.
Yeah, it felt like steel wool.
Yeah, I was gonna say almost like someone rubbing asbestos against you.
Yeah.
Oh God, I just got a chill even thinking of someone rubbing asbestos against me. And it is. Well, I mean, like, my ex-boyfriend was actually there. He was in acting school at the time, and what was I gonna say? He had been more downtown. They were actually walking. I believe he said they were walking up Broadway. So wherever they were, it was like they just looked down the street and it was framed. So I think they must have been walking up Broadway. But it was funny because I keep saying I'm not gonna say that word in that idea. It's funny because he was saying how, you know, they didn't see the plane hit, but they heard it. And then, like, they turned around and were like, what in the world? And then once they got the reality of what was happening, they were like, I know we're all poor kids in acting school, but hey, let's splurge on a cab uptown. How about we get uptown as fast as possible? But then his friend happened to have a roof deck around, like, the 60s. And they just stood there and watched everything happen. But, I remember when he was telling me about that happening, I said, well, because he's the only person that I know that was a resident of New York City at the time, which both my siblings are now residents of New York City. And it is something that I think about a lot. And I worry about a lot with them. And even though, like, I don't worry about anything, like, I'll move to Iraq if you want me to right now. I'll handle myself. But at the same time, there's always that back of your mind. It's like so many, New York City in so many ways, represents a lot of the things that other countries very much dislike about us, which is what makes it such an easy target. And not easy in terms of it's easy to infiltrate, but easy in terms of legitimizing, like, this is what we should hit because this symbolizes this. But I remember asking him after he told me about what it was like to be there then. I said, well, so in the days following, what was it like? He's like, well, first couple of days, like you, if you lived south of like 125th Street, like you really couldn't do anything. Like, because there were, you know, it was like 6 inches or more of that dust on the street. Most people were so scared, they were just like staying inside, or so depressed that they were staying inside. And then for the next like at least year afterwards, he said it just, there was a general sense of gloom and doom. It was just like everyone, like when we were prepared, like in preparing for talking about this tonight, I was trying to just read, you know, read some statistics about it and things like that. And they listed, I think it's cool that they passed a law that FEMA has to recognize people who have gotten cancer, even if it's decades later, from either dust inhalation or living, like even if they weren't there for September 11th, living within a certain radius of ground zero. Yeah. And that FEMA had to cover, or FEMA, or who is it, FEMA that covers that? Whatever the organization.
There's a fund that's
like
been
the fund,
set up.
Yeah, like the 9/11 fund. But one of the things that I thought it was cool that they included this, but also very sad, they said that the most common affliction is that a lot of people have very severe PTSD.
Yep.
Which you don't think of someone outside of like the army having PTSD. I mean, we can have like slight PTSD, but we're talking like people had to be hospitalized. It got so bad.
I know somebody who died in the World Trade Center.
God.
Ray Metz, who was a classmate of mine and a very dear friend of my dear friend Roberts. He was part of the evacuation team for his office following the first bombing attack on the World Trade Center in the 1990s. So he was the one who stayed behind to make sure everyone got out.
Oh, yes. I was going to say, I've read many a story about him.
That's a different guy, but you're thinking about the guy that kept going up and down the stairs taking people out.
Yeah, I was
going
to say the one that worked on like the 95th.
Yeah, this different guy.
Well, still equally heroic.
Yeah, he did his job, you know, stayed behind to make sure everybody was okay and make sure everybody was out. And we never heard anything from him after the plane hit, so we don't know what might have happened on his floor. I know people who watched those towers come down from their dorm rooms on Staten Island. I know somebody who got out of World Trade Center 7, who was working there. It astounds me, actually, that I don't know more people who died in that, because a lot of the people who died were around my age.
Yeah. I was going to say, because it was a lot of people who were like in their first corporate job, or
I was an art kid. I didn't hang out. You know, I was a drama kid. I didn't hang out with the finance majors. So, you know, there was, I wasn't in that world per se. But certainly I knew a ton of people who lived in New York City, and, you know, I was desperately concerned about them for days afterward. But to go back to an earlier point, and to bring this around to what you've been talking about PTSD and my envy of the dead on that day. We like to hold up this idea that we have moved on from 9/11. I don't believe that we have at all. And I think a lot of what we see going on in this country right now, all of the bitter partisanship and all the online antics and all of the general nonsense, goes back to that day.
Oh, absolutely.
And goes back to the fact that we never as a country took a moment to stop and mourn. Yeah. We never took a moment to say, all right, you know what? This is America pre-9/11 funeral day, where we're going to talk about what was great in America before 9/11 and what life was like in America before 9/11, and then we're going to try and go on with our lives.
Yeah.
Because that world, I can tell you, and my understanding of that world, Shay, is very different from yours. Because
yes, absolutely.
You're still a kid, you know?
I'm going to take the SATs any day now.
You're a worldly teenage girl. I know you're a worldly, mature for your years teenage girl, but you're I'm a working adult. You know, I've been out of academia. Like,
I'm going to say, I'm still kind of ripe.
Some of my coworkers were on a plane flying out of Logan Airport that day.
Oh my God,
so
that's
when
terrifying.
We hear Logan Airport planes going into the tower, we're like,
are those our guys? And it's like, they weren't, because they were flying down south, not cross country.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is why they chose those planes, of course, because they knew that they would have plenty of fuel.
There was a profound, profound shift that took place among very average people after 9/11. And that profound shift really came down to a fear of the other.
Oh, absolutely.
That was the big thing that happened. And last week we were talking about the commercial with the American flag.
I was going to say that, yeah.
And packaged patriotism and all the rest of that. And I remember seeing that commercial. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, whoever put this together is doing the right thing here. And I know you have a very different view of it. But I had already sensed that incredible current of fear running through the United States. Like, the conspiracy theories began before the dust settled. And that,
literally, before the dust settled.
And that ad, which basically you don't see people in the ad. You just see the flags.
You just see a bunch of Anytown USA door fronts.
You just see the flags.
And then the flags coming in.
Hanging. And it's what the ad is basically saying is, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter where you're from in this country. It doesn't matter who you are. We are all in this together.
Yeah, like, we're called the United States because we are united.
That's what they were aiming for. And unfortunately, almost immediately...
That was not interpreted properly.
Early days of the internet, people start going, well, you know, America's the reason why this happened. America's policies and America this and America that. And if you're wrapping yourself up in the flag, you're a patriotic jerk. And then the "these colors don't run" bumper stickers started showing up. And then the American eagle on the back of the pickup truck window started showing up, you know, with the gun rack in back of it. And the country just sort of split. And if you're patriotic and you're wrapping yourself in the flag and you're wearing the flag pin and all the rest of this, well, you know, you're what's wrong with America. You're one of these conservative haters and you don't understand. And everybody on the right sitting there going, you idiot liberals don't realize what it is that we're doing to keep you safe.
Well, and even, I mean, and it's not, that is definitely true, but there's also the, I guess I would call it subconscious level of that, of the way it changed how we think and how we view things without even realizing it, and often to a fault. Like, even, I mean, you know, you make fun of how liberal and I love everybody I am, but, yeah, you know, except for jerks. I don't like jerks. But it's strange how something can, it's almost like things got incepted into our minds from both positive and negative, but things got incepted into our minds as a result of 9/11. Like, I was walking home from work last night, or I was walking back to my car from work last night. I can't walk from Cambridge to Winter Hill. I mean, I could, but I'd be really tired. I'm passing an apartment building, and there are two women in hijabs, and a dude, I presume one of their husbands. But they have like a big like dolly type thing, and have like cases and cases and cases of water and a couple cases of canned food. And involuntarily, just my like knee-jerk, instant, split-second reaction was, should I be worried about this? And then, of course, the minute the thought came into my brain, I was like, would you be thinking, if they looked like anybody else, you'd be like, oh, someone got some good deals at Costco? Like, I would never, and I don't, like, that's the thing, is typically, like, I don't go around being like, oh my God, all Muslims are terrorists. Like, I'm not one of those people. But even people who are generally tolerant, generally, I like hanging out with different cultures, it took me aback that was my reaction. And I don't know if maybe it was because it was the anniversary, so it was in the back of my brain or what. But I think that a lot of people, like I said, that aren't even the, like, you know, fist pounding, like, I'm American. Still, September 11 did change at least a little something in all of us in terms of both patriotism and in terms of fear.
Yeah.
And I hate, like, that's the, like I said, the minute that thought went into my brain, I was like, Shay, you jerk.
One of the interesting aspects of this, and I got one of those too, because in 2004 I flew across country, and there was a young Middle Eastern man sitting next to me who clearly did not like flying, okay? Because he was sweating and shifting in his seat the whole time and very, very nervous. Mm. Well, this is, you know, at the height of if you see something, say something before they put X-ray scanners and full body pat downs in all of our airports. And I'm sitting there.
I was saying, before they get to see all of our naked silhouettes very, very, very graphically.
And it's part of me is like, is this guy up to something? And then the other part of me is like, this guy's just trying to get somewhere.
Yeah, this guy's just a guy.
Doesn't like being on a plane. I didn't say anything to anybody. He wasn't talking to anybody, so I wasn't going to talk to him. But it was, there was that moment where it's like, are you nervous because you don't like being on the plane? Or are you nervous because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing? Should I be? I wasn't ever worried. You know, I wasn't worried that the guy was going to jump up and start knifing everybody. But clearly,
there was just like an under the surface, slight kind of
visibly agitated Middle Eastern man on a domestic cross country flight.
Yeah, like you wouldn't have noticed him if he looked like you.
Yeah, from Logan to Los Angeles. It's like, this is exactly the kind of thing.
This is all way too familiar.
Fortunately, I'm smart enough to look at that situation and be like, this poor bastard just doesn't want to be on this plane any more than I do. And probably did not have nearly as much to drink at the airport bar before he got on the plane. So,
see, you should have told him that that's the key to not being afraid to fly.
Yeah.
Just get absolutely wasted before you get on the plane.
So you can't drink in some of these religions. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So
they can't do a lot of fun stuff.
But the thing,
I can't imagine not being able to eat cow product. That would make me really sad.
One of the big
that
roots.
That was a little aside from Shay.
One of the big roots of 9/11 belongs to my generation and the older generations.
Bunch of jerks.
Because for everything that we had experienced in our lives up to that point, which in my case included the Vietnam War, it included the Challenger disaster, the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan, the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, Waco, Texas, Columbine, all of these things. Oklahoma City was probably the one that stood out the most.
Up until 9/11, I thought that Columbine would be the craziest thing I ever saw. But sorry, go ahead.
Oklahoma City stood out the most because here were over 100 Americans killed at work by a bomb planted by a terrorist.
Who went to Harvard.
The thing about it was the terrorist was us. He was one of us. And you could look at that and you could be like, that's a crazy man. And he did a crazy thing with his crazy friend. And let's hope this never, ever happens again. And let's go deal with the crazy people. 9/11 was something else entirely, and as that attack unfolded, it became clear that this was very, very well coordinated.
Oh, yeah.
Diabolical in how well it was executed. And nothing had ever challenged the safety that you felt as an American like that up until that moment. We had never been at that point.
Well,
where all of a sudden, our infrastructure is being turned against us, innocent lives are being lost, and the first question in everybody's mind is, how the hell did this happen, and who do we blame?
Well, and I think that making the parallel to Oklahoma City is a very good point, because with Timothy McVeigh, it was almost comforting, like you said, it was almost comforting that he was just a crazy dude who hated everyone. Equal opportunity hater. He hated everybody. But this was a group of people, different, and obviously we have plenty, at the time we had plenty of Muslims in our country, we do now too. But considering, you know, that they weren't from America, this is a group of people not from America who hate us, not because they're crazy guys who hate all people. They hate us specifically because we are America. Specifically because of that.
The cynical view is that Osama bin Laden had done this simply to finance al-Qaeda by placing short sell options on airline stocks. And that is one of the, that is one of the things that they did.
I was going to say, well, it's the irony of that being that, I mean, that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
And because he even, and again, I don't speak Arabic, but in that, I remember in that video that got leaked of him, which, like I said, none of us at the time spoke Arabic. A lot of people speak it now, but like no one that is like, it's, how am I trying to say this? People didn't randomly learn Arabic unless it was part of their culture. Let's put it that way. But he's like, I remember one of the lines being, or one of the things he said being, which just got me like, just got me guffy, was something like, oh, you know, yeah, that caused way more damage than I thought it would. Like, basically, like, I was super pleased. Like, I just thought it would, like, burn a couple floors or something. You know what I mean? Like, it was very, like, I didn't even think it was going to be that big a deal, when it's, like, the most devastating thing in history to ever happen to our country. Not that our country's history is that old, but I mean, considering all, like, all the things you just named that have been horrible that have happened, it's, I mean, that's a pretty prestigious award to get to be the worst thing that's ever happened.
17 years
it's
later.
Tough competition.
Here's where I think we went wrong. And here's
There's
where
just one place.
And here's where I think we begin to heal. We have framed this as a failure. We have framed this as a failure on our part to control our borders, as a failure on our part to provide security on our airplanes, as a failure on our part to anticipate this kind of attack. I think we need to flip that thinking. I think we need to stop looking at 9/11 as something where we failed. And we need to start looking at it as a situation where the terrorists succeeded, because they had nothing else to do. And they had the resources and they had the means to study and plot very, very quietly, and to learn everything about us and to understand exactly how to exploit everything that we had set up.
To take flying schools in our country.
It is, when you study it.
Take flying classes, sorry. I don't know why I said schools.
One of the most
that sounded weird.
Diabolically brilliant military operations in human history.
I would say, that I think is, that's what gets me about it a lot. Like, for example, like when I think of drug dealers, like thugs dropped out of school when they were 12, a lot of them are very, very, very smart, when you'd expect, like, oh, he's uneducated, like he's a crack dealer. Like, but if you think about some of the things they pull off, the things they manage to not get caught,
yeah,
it's the same thing where it's like, you're like, how can this, like, ragtag group of, like, what was it, 19 of them?
Yeah.
How can 19 guys, not from this country, took like 3 months of flying lessons and aren't engineers, aren't aerialists, aren't professional navigators, or what's the people that make maps? Cartographers, like, aren't, you know what I mean? Like, it pulls something like this off. And they did almost flawlessly, almost. Like, the Pennsylvania,
they couldn't figure out how to find what they wanted to hit in Washington. So they hit the Pentagon instead of the Capitol building.
I was going to say, because they were supposed to hit the Capitol.
Yeah.
Which I think is also kind of,
or the White House. One of the, those,
yeah,
were
say,
the two
one of
targets.
Those, which I think is also kind of poetic that, like, I mean, the Capitol building's pretty much out there on its own. If you generally know what it looks like, you're going to be able to find it. And it kind of speaks to, which I remember, you know, when you're 15, you're still, like, kind of cute and naive and, like, can't we all hug each other? But it kind of speaks to, I remember saying even then, I'm like, how can they hate us so much? Like, they don't even really know us. Like, they know, like, some stuff about us, and I guess some of the stuff they know is, like, hateable, but, like, because I remember having that reaction when it was like, oh, they couldn't figure out what the Capitol was. And I'm like, they don't even know what the Capitol of our country looks like. How can they hate us that much as a whole when we're, like, millions of people and, like, thousands of square miles?
The reason that we are susceptible to this is because we believe in this doctrine of American exceptionality, that we are the best in the world, that nobody can ever beat us, that nobody can ever defeat us. And this became a self-fulfilling prophecy. And this may be another case where
it's kind of them being like, I'll show you.
Where Osama bin Laden and the terrorists were just that smart.
and knew exactly how to undo us, because 17 years later, we are still hurting. 855-915-9636. It is WMFO Medford on the towel. Mikey D will be coming your way to lighten things up with the best of the Boston music scene at 9 o'clock. David Bowie did his part to help us heal.
David Bowie.
Here he is from 17 years ago. This is WMFO Medford.
Cigarettes, Mrs. Wagner's pies, all off to look for America. Kathy, I said, as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said, be careful, his bow tie is really a camera. Me a cigarette, I think there's one in my raincoat. She said, we smoked the last one an hour ago. So I gazed at the scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I said, though I knew she was sleeping, I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for America. They've all come to look for America. All come to look for America.
Japanese volcano, four heavily armored black helicopters spin through the sky in a dance of death. Their target, one man in a flying arsenal that fits in two alligator suitcases. The odds, 4-1. They haven't got a chance. Now. Sean Connery is James Bond.
in Ian Fleming's You Only Live Twice. Sean Connery, James Bond, 007, You Only Live Twice. An Albert R. Broccoli, Harry Saltzman presentation in Panavision Technicolor from United Artists, a Transamerica company. You Only Live Twice, and twice is the only way to live.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dreams.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You're listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Belaine. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We are wrapping things up here, and my goodness, is that upbeat music nice to hear after talking about 9/11 for 30 minutes. But we're going to start wrapping things up, but starting out with telling you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past or coming week. And as I like to do, shameless plug.
Boo.
No, but I'm very excited about this one, and it isn't even just about me. It is about the very exciting fact that the new location of the Comedy Studio is officially open.
Yay.
Anyone who's ever hung out in Cambridge has probably been to the Comedy Studio. It used to be located on the third floor of the Hong Kong Chinese restaurant on Mass Ave in Harvard Square. Had to move, but they have moved to Bow Market in Union Square in Somerville, which is closer to me, so yay.
It's right back at Sally O'Brien's in PA's Lounge,
kids. I would say it's right near Sally O'Brien's, if you know where that is. It's actually also in the same complex as Remnant Brewing, and their beer is good. So it's like one-stop shopping, like get a little buzz on, get a little laugh on, gonna be a good night. But I'm doing my first show there at the new location on Sunday night. So please either order online, come by. You can usually buy tickets at the door on Sundays. But it's really, I saw the room when it was under construction. I can't wait to see it all up and running, and I really think you'll be impressed. So if you want to get tickets beforehand, go to thecomedystudio.com.
It is September, and you know what that means, kids. The Monster cereals are back in stock at Target.
Oh, I thought you were going to say bougie chicks start getting pumpkin-flavored stuff.
Boxes and boxes and boxes of the Monster cereals, Frankenberry, Count Chocula, and Booberry are waiting for you at Target.
Fruit.
No Fruit Brute again this year. They get major points taken off for the lack of Fruit Brute, which was the finest of the Monster cereals.
It's also just really fun to say, Fruit Brute.
Only the original Fruit version, Brute. Though, with the lime marshmallows.
You would like lime marshmallows. WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're going to wrap things up here at The Big Picture with, well, that's a thing that happened, which is the craziest news story from last week. For me, an Ohio mother believed to be overdosing on heroin gave birth in a Burger King bathroom stall. And first responders ended up finding the baby alive in the toilet. Police initially responded to reports of a man who had passed out in a vehicle outside the restaurant and that a woman who was with him had overdosed inside. Officers said they found 26-year-old Zachary Fry passed out behind the wheel of his running vehicle, and Elizabeth Sanders, also 26, sitting on the toilet in the women's restroom, a suspected ball of heroin on the floor beside her. Sanders told officers she thought she had suffered a miscarriage. However, when the officer looked inside the toilet, there was an infant lying face up. The officer reportedly told Sanders to stand up, causing the child to roll face down into the water, but a medic quickly grabbed the newborn, who was still breathing, and the baby was taken to the hospital and is expected to make a full recovery. But they don't. The only problem is they don't really know what they're going to do about whose custody to place the child in. Fry has been taken to Ross County Jail and charged with operating a vehicle impaired and possession of drug paraphernalia. And Mother of the Year, Sanders, I gave birth in a toilet. pleaded guilty after being charged over an unrelated warrant for theft.
The family that Narcan's together stays together.
The American dream.
Australia. Call it double pythons flying ruckus or just another reason not to live in Brisbane. A suburban couple heard a crash in their spare bedroom and opened the door to find 2 6-foot pythons fighting with each other. They called Snake Catchers Brisbane, reminding us to look up the names of local businesses before moving somewhere, because if Snake Catchers Brisbane exists, there's a need for it. They sent out Laura Field to remind